It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to Waltrip Unfiltered. Look right there. Mr. Hall of Fame himself, Bobby Labonte, joins me on today's episode of Waltrip Unfiltered. Thank you, everyone that tunes in and listens or watches. I get so many great comments about the guests I have. I'm really honored to have such a great lineup of guests. And Bobby, I appreciate you joining me today. Congratulations on your latest honor, you Hall of Famer, you, and your great career. Appreciate you being on.
Well, thank you, Michael. Thank you for that intro. And I'm sure, like we talked about before, I'm up the top of the list as far as your soiree of guests, right? I hope I am.
You certainly are. All you have to do is, if you study NASCAR at all and you think of the things that you've accomplished, you deserve top billing. So let's have a fun show. What do you say? Tell everybody at home we're going to have a good time.
We are going to have a good time. Michael and I were able to do some shows together on Fox, on Race Hub, just last week. And so excited to do that and excited to be on your show.
Stay tuned. Well, Bobby, like I said, the Hall of Fame is certainly the first thing that comes to my mind that I want to talk to you about. I've, you know, known you my whole adult life, it seems like. And all you've done since you came to NASCAR is win. You've won everywhere. And all those wins and the person that you are, how you conducted yourself over the years, it certainly was no doubt in my mind that you were a Hall of Famer, and it's official. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, Michael. And, you know, I mean, reflecting back on it, it was so fun to reflect back on your whole career and your life. And I think the things that come to my mind are just the way that our parents raised us. You know, if you could think back, I mean, we were destined to be who we are through our upbringing and our work ethic. And, you know, I just love that my dad and my mom were there. And the fact that, you know, they taught us to work hard, race hard, you know, and be the best you can be, win if you can. And I think of Terry and I both being in it and truly something special, but, you know, obviously the groundwork was laid by our parents. So it was, I just think about that being the most special part about it.
You know, I think of your mom as the sweetest lady in the world, and I think your dad is just a tough guy. And that combination, certainly you guys knew you had to put the work in to get the results and have the opportunities that you got. What was it like as a little boy before you were racing with mom and dad around the house and big brother Terry?
Exactly what you said. You know, mom, she could control things, but my dad, he'd fly off the handle at this and that. And I mean, so, but my dad's got the biggest heart, but, and yet my mom can be as strict as possible too. I mean, when I knew my name was Robert Allen, when she called Robert Allen, I knew I was in trouble. So I think between the both of them, they just helped us, molded us into who we are and what, you know, I just think about my dad's work ethic, and he worked at the Naval Air Station in Texas, and you know, I remember him being pretty hard on Terry, a lot harder on Terry than he was on me. And, but you know, whenever it came time to go racing, neither one of them ever said, let's go do something else. You know, I mean, like it was easy. It would have been easy to say, hey, let's go to the lake and just go skiing, or let's go to the lake, or let's go to the beach and just hang out, or let's do something different. But my dad, like, being a gearhead, and, you know, it was just for us, it was just natural. Because we just were able to go into racing at a young age, and the support that we had from our parents was, you know, second to none. And again, I said this at the Hall of Fame, that my dad, he never wavered on, like, hey, let's go do something else. This is A, too expensive, B, too hard. You know, he's working day and night, you know, two shifts a day, going to bed at night, sleeping and doing it for years. He never wavered off that. So that just kept us focused on what we were doing. And I think it helped us, obviously just made us stronger. And, you know, when we kept graduating up to different classes or different levels, you know, I think that just, you know, we just were trained to do that. So we just worked hard at it. And, we're trying to be as successful as possible, and it worked out.
Well, Terry, is he 8 years older than you? Thereabouts?
Seven. Yeah, seven or eight, six, seven. Yeah.
I'm curious because when I came along, Daryl was 16 years older than me. And when I got ready to go racing and I told mom and dad I wanted to be a racer just like Daryl, they said, we ain't going through that again. That was hard. we spent all the money we had and we didn't take you little kids on any vacations. We were always racing and we're not doing it again. You were good the whole time though, even though it was 8 years between or whatever, that your dad was still into you racing as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the only thing that probably fluctuated, Michael, as you 16 years is a bigger gap for you and Daryl, but for us is that Terry's 16 racing stock cars and I'm racing quarter midgets, and you can't be both places at the same time. So it wasn't like, you know, we were close enough. So there was a gap there, enough of a gap that I had to kind of do some different things. So I remember going go-kart racing at go-kart racing in Savannah or Charlotte or Talladega. In a different with a group of buddies. So my dad couldn't go because he was doing something else, you know. So but I mean, it never changed. It's just that on the weekends I'd go go-kart racing with some buddies and he'd go to the NASCAR race with Terry. So but all in all, there was never a time that it seemed like, hey, you know, you're squashed down, we're going to focus on Terry. We were all in it together, whether we were going to watch him racing with me or racing with him. So I never felt any disconnect from my parents.
Take me back to the 70s when Terry from Texas Terry. Is that why they call him that? Because y'all are from Texas? Yeah, I think that's right.
Yep.
I'm just getting right down to the facts here, Bobby. You're going to learn a lot during this show. But what I wanted to ask is, he got the opportunity to go cup racing. What was he just a great short track racer in Texas? Was there some reason why you saw that he got this great opportunity? So, you know, seemingly from out, sort of like Daryl from Kentucky, you know, winds up in NASCAR. Here comes Texas Terry.
Yeah. Well, he was, I mean, that goes back to my dad and a bunch of guys building a 57 Chevy or a 73 Camaro or whatever it would have been. I mean, whatever he raced, he won. I loved it. The fact that, you know, for me as a kid, when I wasn't racing, I could go watch him race, you know? So I was always busy watching him race. So I probably sat through a bunch of his races. And, you know, whenever the announcer would be like, hey, there's a bounty on Terry Labonte tonight for $50, who can beat him because he keeps winning all the time. And I remember going to the payout window, and my dad, they'd hand my dad an envelope with $99 in it. And $99 was, he won the feature. Yeah, he won the heat race, the Australian pursuit. He won all three. He made $99. And we won. So, and through that whole graduation, I mean, he would just continue to win throughout all the series or all the tracks in the next class. And so that's why he got the opportunity with Billy Hagan, you know, roundabout way to go race.
Yeah. And that a key to me learning how to race as a kid was I watched everything my brother did. And I'm sure I know you've given Terry so much credit for what you've accomplished, the great career that you had. But it was really cool seeing a template. I mean, all we had to do is basically follow directions and we, you know, we could get this opportunity. And I'm really cool that. To hear how appreciative you all and your brother and everything that has made you the Hall of Famer you are, that says a lot for the person you are.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great template for me to have. I mean, I watched all Terry's, the stuff, good stuff he did, maybe a few mistakes he might have made along the way. As a kid growing up, I knew I wasn't going to get my butt spanked like he did. And so it was fun to watch. And we never really raced against each other, Michael, until Charlotte in like 1991. So for us, never racing against each other was probably the best thing because we never had a rivalry. There was never a like, hey, I'm this, I'm that. So for us growing up, it was just, you know, again, a family affair. And for us to go racing, he always helped me out throughout my career, you know, once we got started in North Carolina. So that was fun to see. And it's always good to reflect back on that.
I like a story talking about coming to North Carolina and getting started. I like a story that Kenny Schrader told. Said you and Terry and Kenny went to Hickory Motor Speedway to test. And, you know, they shook down the car and you got in the car. And when the test was all over, Terry and Kenny said, you know, a couple things we've learned here. He's pretty fast learner, and it looks like, it appears he might be better than both of us, because you really adapted to it in a hurry. Do you recall that test and that story?
I do recall that test. I remember all that. I think it was one of Terry's cars, the MW Windows car maybe, or something like that. And so I was still in the Busch Grand National Series full time. And I do remember that, doing that. And it was funny that, and I'll tell you a different phase of that, but yeah, I mean, it was cool, because I mean, I probably just didn't know any better. You know how Hickory is. I mean, you've raced there many times and you just didn't know any better, and I just like went around it. And but it was kind of fun that I was in my element at the time, and you know, they're kind of dabbling in it, per se, like going to Hickory for a fun day or whatever, where to me I'm serious and you know, this is your life, right? But I've also been to Caraway Speedway later in life, where my nephew was practicing, and I said, here, I'll drive it. So I was like 3/10 slower than him every time I went out. I went, well, I guess I forgot how to drive today. So it worked the other way as to me as well, like it did for them.
Well, when you came to North Carolina and got your chance in the Busch Series, you certainly took advantage of it. Tell me about the championship season, driving for your family. How surprised were you surprised, I guess, is a question, that you adapted to it so well and understood what it took? And I mean, it to me, it was really impressive. I have an interesting seat on the bus. You know, I showed up in NASCAR, and then all these other kids started getting these chances and winning championships and races. And I was a little bit jealous, but I was also observant, watched how you handled yourself. What was it like when you showed up, and what'd you expect?
Well, you know, the year that we won the championship in 91, we were actually, you know, I was a short track racer in North Carolina, late models, All-American Challenge Series, never drove a big track, right? So I go to Charlotte, we go to Rockingham, and, you know, in 88, 89, running a few races a year, crashed, run pretty good, crashed, run pretty good, got better, right? So in the years, so when I finally got the money to run the full season in 1990, you know, we were able to go and match it, like all, you know, a lot of tracks that we went to. And so for a short track guy, but I love going to Charlotte. I love going to Rockingham, love going to Darlington, love going to Dover. And then in 91, you know, I mean, we had a season under our belts, and everything was working in the right direction. It was just a matter of consistency, and that's what we were able to do. But, you know, it was really cool. In 1990, I had 4 employees. And I think in 1991, we went up to like 6 employees.
And your dad was one, right?
You know, my dad was one. Yep.
One of the employees, yeah.
Crew chief. Well, my mom, she was the bookkeeper. So we had to have family affair in there, right? And so, yeah, we just kept, you know, we thought that in 1990, we just learned from mistakes. I mean, like you hope you always do. And in the 91, we were just able to, you know, be consistent. But what was cool to me was racing against yourself, Earnhardt, Harry Gant, Ron Bouchard, Terry at times, Larry Pearson. I mean, and then the regular guys as well at different times, you know. And I mean, you know, you think about, you know, Earnhardt coming to race with you at Daytona. And I saw a video the other day. I think it was 1990. I led some of the race, and somebody texted me. They were watching on TV, and there's like, how could you finish 7th? I said, man, I was probably so excited I peed my pants. I don't know. You know, because I was leaving. It was like the first time ever there. So, but in 1991, being a family organization, family team, you know, you raced against Steve Grissom, Jeff Burton, Jimmy Hensley, Chuck Bound,
Tommy Houston,
and Tommy Ellis, and so many, Tommy Houston. Oh my God. And I mean, we just were consistent, you know. And I love the big tracks. I mean, I was better at big tracks and short tracks, it seemed like. And, you know, we just had everything together from 90 building on it, to 91 making it happen. But I don't know if you're going to ask, but 1992, we lost by 3 points. if that was your next question. That hurt more than anything in the world. So when Nemechek beat us at Hickory that time and Spencer's out there wrecking and causing all these cautions, I was like, come on, man. And so we lost by 3 points, or we could have been a multiple champion, but it was all good. I mean, it was good to see those guys win, but we won the race and we were fast. It was, man, that was some fun times. That was definitely some good times.
Yeah, I got a question from Reddit, and it's funny you mentioned it. Like, what's the most disappointing memory from your career? And you had so many great memories, and I almost bet it was that loss in the 92 championship.
It was. That was probably hard because we weren't that good. We were okay, but we gained a lot of points the last few races, won Martinsville, and was gaining on it. And anyway, it was, we just got to Hickory and we had to win, which we did. And Nemechek had to finish sixth and he finished fifth. So it was like, what the heck? You know what I mean?
Can you believe that?
That was hard.
Can you look back over that 1992 season and say, you got to be kidding me?
Right. That's lose by 3 points. And I know they can do it nowadays because of the playoffs. But back then, that was a close season finish, you know. And I remember back, a funny story is at Daytona in February of 1992, Todd Bodine, myself, and Nemechek, we crash. We get Nemechek out of the car because he's on fire. We put him on the door top, and he burned his butt. We threw him on the ground because everything's smoking and all that stuff. I remember going, he's all right. And so when the season's over with, and I would never do this, but it's like, dang it, what if we just left him in there for like one more second? So we've joked about it, but it's like, oh man. But it was cool that like Todd, myself, Burton, and all those guys that did that back then. I mean, you know, we all connect somehow still in a lot of different ways today, but that was always a lot of great racing back then.
Well, and you think about what that led to in 90, tell me about when Bill Davis or whomever started talking to you about the Cup Series in 93. When did that first become something that you're like, man, they want me to drive in the Cup Series? What did that feel like? And what are your recollections of that?
Well, you know, it was funny because my agent was my brother. So Terry helped direct me in the right ways. And I remember even back in, it was when Terry drove the Sunoco car, I went to Charlotte and tested that car because he couldn't do it. And I'm testing a Cup car at Charlotte. We, you know, go down in a ramp truck and the whole thing. I mean, it was kind of a little weird, but there was a time that I think it was in 91. Well, let me back up. Billy Stavola. I love Billy Stavola. And so I tried to get a job with them because I got fired before I started racing and they wouldn't hire me because I was Terry's brother. So then fast forward to 91, I think it was.
What kind of job did you want?
I was just a fabricator.
I just wanted to build cars.
Wanted to work on cars, yeah. So in 91, I think I drove for Stavola and Rick Wilson was sick at Bristol. So I drove the Cup car at Bristol. And because he got out of the car, I got in it. And I was running in the top 10, had a flat tire with 100 to go. It was on asphalt. Everybody had flat tires. But I made enough of an impression. They tried to hire me to drive their Cup car. But Terry said, nah, you don't need to do that. That was too soon. So that was probably a good move because, if you jump up too fast and something happens, you're probably not going to get back up there, right? So whenever the deal with Jeff Gordon and Bill Davis fizzled away, Bill and I became friends. And so it just kind of worked out with Jeff's departure that we, you know, merged together as far as our friendship, and we lived 10 miles away from each other, that I would drive his car in 1993, which was sponsored by Maxwell House. And, you know, kind of that story goes on for the racing for Rookie of the Year. But so Bill and I got together after Jeff left, and, we lived close together, and it seemed like that was the right opportunity for me. At the time, as far as a rookie team, rookie driver, new sponsor, and just try to put it all together with him and Tim Brewer and Gail and, you know, everybody else working there.
You know, I know you love your brother and you give him so much credit, but when you see him and you think about him telling you that we didn't need to get in this Cup car, you probably ought to hug them every time, because if you look at what all you've accomplished, that was certainly an opportunity that I know a young kid, you're like, yeah, that's us, brother, right? And brother's like, no, I don't think so. That was sound advice, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's probably saved me more times than I could, you know, on my both hands and feet I could tell you about. So it was always good to have a trustworthy, sound advice person.
Yes, sir. The Rookie of the Year, 93, Jeff Gordon took that. And I have a question. We have this hashtag, it's Ask Mikey, and you can hashtag us on Reddit or Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever you like. And if you hashtag Ask Mikey, we'll ask a question. And one of the questions from Twitter is, let me paraphrase, it's kind of long. At what moment did you feel like you belonged in the Cup Series? What was the, like, did you pass Dale Earnhardt, or did you outrun your brother? What happened that made you realize, man, I can do this?
You know, I think driving for Bill was a great experience and helped. I hope we helped each other out get to the next level. But I'd say in 95, when I drove for Coach, when I stepped in the 18 car, well, I don't know. There's a couple things, but like, we went to test at Texas World Speedway in 94.
I remember that College Station, Texas.
Yep. And I remember hauling it off into turn one at 201 miles an hour. And I never sat in this car before in my life, you know, never worked with these guys before in my life. And I drove off in the corner, and you about hold it wide open for about three laps here. And I'm like, this is good. You know what I mean? It's like, okay. So it helped me prepare me for for the future, because I thought for sure that gave me another level of confidence. You know, you can tell yourself you have it. Okay, I can do this. I can do this. But then when you get into something like that and you're surrounded by people that just put you to the next level, I mean, that just, you know, made it that much better. But, you know, I think that was one of the times. And then obviously when we started off in 95 and we were just like fast out of the gate, it's like, okay, you know, when people are watching you, you're like, we made it. This is the Cup Series. This is not late models at Caraway. This is not a limited sportsman car. This is not anything like that. This is the Cup Series, the highest of the highs. And you're racing against people like yourself and the Earnhardts of the world, the Bill Elliotts and da, 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 da. You know, it's like, that's pretty damn cool. You know what I mean? That's feel like you finally, you've got to a point where this is what you've been working for all these years to get to that point.
Yeah. My moment was, and I ran second, I think in 88 at Pocono, but it was a fuel mileage thing. And I'd won Busch races, but I'd never really, I'd survived and I was fast, but I couldn't get it all to work out. And then my moment came in the Coke 600 in 1990. I think I finished third or fourth, but like Rusty Wallace, I think won, and Bill Elliott was right there. And we come off turn four for the checker flag, and like they were right there. I didn't beat them, but I was right on their tails. And I just said, you know, I can, and that, Bobby, that was four or five years into me being there. How hard it was just to scratch and survive and finally have that moment where you're like, I can do this. That was special. You have some special memories in the Coke 600 as well, don't you?
Yeah, that was I always look at it, and you probably helped me figure out that is a true story the way it works, because for me, that I've seen a lot of people, the Coke 600 being as long as race, sometimes it's a turning point in their confidence career that you knew that you could do this. For me, the Coke 600, my first year in 93, we go down there for the Winston, I call it the hooligan race, whatever it was called back then.
Well, you can bet I was there.
There was 40 cars that were in the hooligan race, right? And I qualified like 36th. And I thought, well, okay, if we come back next week for the Coke 600, I'm not going to make the race, because there's that many cars trying to make the race and I'm not going to make it. You know what I mean? Because that's when you had to qualify. There wasn't no gimme. So wasn't no, here's your ribbon, go home. It's like, so we were so bad for that all-star race or whatever they called it. We went home, took the same car home. I went over to my brother's race shop, driving for Billy Hagan. I took a straight edge, tape measure, me and Pete Wright. We measured up to A-frame points, lower ball joint points, lower pivot points. We went back to the Bill Davis shop, welded up the holes, re-drilled new holes, got some Laughlin spindles, and went back to Charlotte. I qualified sixth or seventh and finished like sixth. Like in the Coke 600, at 500 miles, it was Dale Jarrett first and I was second. And I'm like, how'd this happen? Last week, I didn't think I was going to make the race. So that was like the coolest moment, because it's like we made something out of – I mean, my career was like, oh, my God, I'm not going to make it, to where it's like, okay, now we see something. Now you're there with them. You're there with Earnhardt and all those guys. The only thing that got me that day was I was wore out, because yeah. I've never done that before. But then we go back 2 years later and to win my first race, which is, again, you win your first race to be in the Coke 600 is like – okay, can you really script this any better? I mean, right. It's not Rockingham. It's not Wilkesboro. You know, it's not Richmond. It's the Coke 600. And and I was following Schrader there, and I thought, am I going to be able to pass him? And he blows up, and I'm like, all right, now what do I do? So I run like 20 laps in the lead. I'm like, I've never been here before. But as it all, you know, came down at the end of it, it was so cool to be able to win your first race at a track like Charlotte and the Coke 600. So, I mean, it's like, man, that's awesome. I mean, how does it get any better than that?
I'll tell you something funny. You're talking about measuring the spindles and getting your car fixed up like your big brothers and the difference it made. When I struggled, you know, in the 80s a bit, in the 90s, it wasn't easy. But Rusty Wallace, I had a couple friends on his team, and he had a Pontiac, and his sponsor was Miller Genuine Draft. And on the back of his car, behind the back wheel, the word draft was written, D-R-A-U-G-H. I don't know how you spell it. How you spell it? D-R-A-U-G. It's a lot of letters.
Draft. And, yeah. D-R-A-U-G-H.
Yeah. Okay. So I said to one of my friends, I said, please get me that decal. I got a point I'm going to make. I said, give me that decal. And so he got me a decal, and I put it on a piece of sheet metal, and I cut it out to that size, the size that it was draft. And I called my car owner at the time into the shop after hours, and a couple of crew guys that I've become buddies with. And our car that we were going to take to the next race was sitting there ready to be loaded on the truck. And I said, I know I might not be the best driver ever, but I don't leave the shop with a chance in hell of winning, because our cars are ridiculously off, way off. And he's like, well, sir, we have a great sponsor, and we have great crews. We have great cars. I said, okay, let me just show you something here about this car. And I took the piece of word that said draft, and I tried to put it behind the back wheel, and the FT was hanging off the bumper. Do you know what I'm, you know, everybody stretches their cars, and they're doing all this stuff, and I'm driving a stock Pontiac Grand Prix, and right. I had that draft word on there, and the car owner, he didn't really know how important that was, but we were able to make some changes and make the cars better. But that story you told of that's how you did it back then. You know, you couldn't sit around, like you couldn't wait till the next week. You had to go fix your car.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we had to do. Same way with the moving pivot points around and buying a set of spindles other than those spindles and moving your, you know, you couldn't move a body forward 4 inches or back 4 inches in a weekend, but you could do it over time. And, you know, where his body was that way and your body was that way wasn't good at that time. But yeah, that's how you had to do it back then. And that's where, I mean, you would have, you know, you'd look at somebody or watch them or, you know, I mean, you'd, I know they do it today, but I mean, that's how you had to do it back then. You just kind of had to be more, not creative, but you had to be creative yourself and show them that over some engineer saying that.
So you won the all, or excuse me, you won the 600, but the question from Ask Mikey is, what's your favorite NASCAR memory? And with what all you've accomplished, people ask me that sometimes, and I haven't did near what you did, but I have trouble picking one. But I'm gonna say the championship is huge. But with you and your brother in victory lane in 96 at Atlanta, you've talked about how much he means to you and the family. How cool was that?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's hard to pick just one, but that was the coolest thing because as we led up into that race, I mean, we, again, our whole lives are, you know, basically together weekend. We're talking during the week and, you know, we don't talk racing. We're just brothers. We have fun or whatever it might be. And we'll get to the racetrack and we'll park next to each other and we'll have a beer and we'll talk and we'll, you know, see each other the next day and we'll practice and race and we'll say, hey, how's your car? You know, is it tight? Is it loose? Is it this? Is it that? You know, blah, blah, blah. So we're going throughout the whole year and we get to 96 and he's obviously at the end of 96 and he's obviously has a chance to win the championship. So my parents are obviously, you know, going to Atlanta. They're at the racetrack. So, but Saturday night, my brother and I were talking. He was like, man, he said, you know, you start first and I'm third. He said, if I could lead a lap, that'd be awesome because I need 5 extra points. And I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, of course. And I mean, if he told me to wreck on the first lap, I would have done it. You know what I mean? Just, I said, yeah, sure. So he goes, I think we both said it kind of at the same time. It's like, wouldn't it be cool if you won the race and you won the championship, you know, and I won the champ, you know, I won the race, you won the championship. It would be pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, didn't think nothing of it. So then the next day, the PR guy for Kellogg's and Terry, he wanted to put a hat in my car for victory lane for Terry. And I was like, no, that's, you know, that's the worst. Don't do that. That is jinxy right there. So don't jinx this thing. So anyway, so fast forward to the race. Gordon had a little issue. Terry took the lead. I took it back. He got his 5 extra points. We ended up winning the race. He wins the championship. And it's like, that, it was so, again, kind of a scripted thing that was not scripted or not rehearsed, but pulling up beside him was like, I just went like, hey, good job. And he was like, yay. And it's all of a sudden that moment was like, oh my gosh, that was crazy. So I pulled off, got to victory lane, and he comes to victory lane. And I think the best thing about it is you got a picture of Terry and myself and our parents. And it's like, okay, what, how, put all this together. How devoted, how quarter midget racing, how all this stuff pays off to where you're both, your kids are in victory lane the same day. You got Coach Gibbs, you got Rick Hendrick, and it's just like, I mean, you look back on it now and you're like, how could that have ever been? I mean, how could that have happened that way? So that had to be the most special moment just because as a family, what we've done all of our lives and what we continue to do is, you know, we all are fans of racing or in racing or have raced and whatever it might be. And my parents, I just saw my dad at the race shop a while ago and just, you know, side story. But anyway, so he's over there doing something. And yeah, so it's like, that's the best thing. I mean, our parents being there in victory lane with both of us winning at the same time, but the same day on the same track, somehow, some way, you know, all that just, yeah. That's just ironic. You had to sit there and scratch your head and go, is this for real? I mean, is this for real? So that was probably the most special day of our family ever.
That is incredible. 1998 Daytona 500 wasn't bad either. You and Terry on the pole, and then you finished second to Dale when he won the 500. Do you have any Jim from Arkansas wants to know, do you have a Dale story?
Well, there's a few of those. Yeah, there's a few of those.
He rattled your brother's cage. Did he ever get into your cage?
Well, that's where all that – no. And what happened was, as a rookie in 93, I was at Loudoun, New Hampshire, and he was awful there. I don't think he's that good there. Anyway, so I come off turn two, and I go to pass him, and he runs me all the way down the grass on the back straightaway, which, you know, that's pretty wide. So he knew I was there. It's not like he was going to pit, you know, dude. So he run me down the grass. So we went and turned three. I hit him, and he went up the racetrack. I kept going. And it's like, that's like, that was it. You know, that was, he didn't come back to get me or nothing like that. But, I mean, there is more than one story, but another story was at Charlotte. I think it was, might've been the, it wasn't the Coke 600 that I won. It was a different race, but I was so fast and he was leading the race. And you know how he would drive. He would go so fast for 10 laps. He'd pull you and then he'd give up the right front tire. He'd start fading and you can catch him and you'd pass him, you know? And so I was catching him and I went down the front straightaway and I hit him because I was like going 10 mile an hour faster and I didn't gauge it right. And I hit him and got him all squirrely and I passed him. I went down to turn three and I was like, dang, he's going to be pissed. So I went up the racetrack. I let him go. And then I went, dang, that probably pissed him off even worse. So then I passed him back and I was like, well, heck, I don't know what to do now. I've already made him mad.
Yeah.
So Childress is on the radio crying the blues because I hit him and he said I couldn't see over the steering wheel and all that stuff. So, but it was funny because I don't think we've ever had any, there was never anything that was like, hey, this. I will say this one time at Watkins Glen, I qualified first because it rained out. I would have never qualified first for a road course ever. Rained out. He's second. And he never would have qualified, but maybe one time on a road course that good. So we take off on the green flag. I run three laps. And he's right on, you know, he's right behind me. We go through the inner loop. We come out of the inner loop, and he's crashed. He crashed off the inner loop. So the next week, we're at Daytona doing a test. He walked up to me and grabbed me by the, you know, grab you like that, pick me up off the ground. He said, why'd you wreck me last weekend? And my eyes went like, because for a moment, he convinced you that you wrecked him. And I went, I said, how'd I wreck you? He said, I was trying to follow you through the inner loop, but you were going faster than I could go. And then he just grinned and let me go. So, I mean, those are some fun stories with Earnhardt. But that's a couple of them there. But, I mean, that's maybe a different episode for, you know, for a lot of people but and yourself. But it was always funny that Dale was a guy to me that would help me more than rattle my cage. He and Terry were probably too close in age where, for me, it was like, you know, he seemed to help me. And he helped me get the ride at Gibbs. You know, he helped me throughout, you know, a lot, you know, throughout my career. So that was kind of some fun stories, but that was probably two of the fun ones right there.
Yeah. He helped me. He got me the ride with the Wood Brothers. So a lot of people don't know all the things that he had influence over and things that he did. And, you know, certainly those stories, I like hearing the fun stories, the cool stories, the things that he did. Talk about 2000, you know, we're to that point, been going a little bit chronologically. We're 2000 now. And that season, how many weeks did you lead the points?
It had to be almost every week. I mean, it was all but a few, I guess. I don't know. Probably all but two or three, maybe.
Wow. Did 99, did the, when the 99 season ended, did you say we are in a good spot?
Oh yeah. I knew when you're at the banquet in New York City and you're sitting there and Dale Jarrett's up there on stage drinking champagne and you're drinking water, you're like, this pissed me off. So it right then and there, I was like, we've got to, you know, I mean, it was, you don't say it and do it. You just have to do it. And you know, it's just like you get that close and you make one mistake and that costs you the championship. And again, you learn from your mistakes and you want to be better. And that's what 99 did for us, is it made us better for 2000. And we, you know, we were just so, I'm not going to say dominant. We were just so good in 2000. It was just going to be hard for anybody to get us.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier about your big track prowess, a kid from Texas that raced on little tracks, but you seemed to like the big tracks better. But you went to Victory Lane in Martinsville. That short track victory that's got to be another special moment in your career, getting that victory.
Yeah, it was, and I mean it's a deal where it's so weird, and you grow up on short tracks, and you think that's the you know, that's where you should be the best at. But so many guys don't do that. I mean, a lot of guys that did grow up on short tracks aren't necessarily short track guys. But yeah, winning Martinsville was cool. I mean, I've won there in a Bushcraft National car in a truck and got a cup win there, and, you know, had some good runs and second, third, fourth, and fifth, you know, I mean, just had some good success. And, you know, I mean, so it was fun. And Martinsville is one of those places that's, you know, it's just, it's hard by your, if you were to race 500 laps here by yourself, it's hard not to just crash, hit the wall or break something on your own without racing somebody. So, so anyway, that was a cool victory in its own. And, you know, I think that, when you think back on it, in fact, right there is a clock.
Yeah, I see it.
I think that's the clock right there. So anyway, so that's obviously when you win the race like that, when you win Martinsville and you're up in victory lane and they're like, here's your clock. And it's like, all right, let me go get my truck. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like, uniform on, you put in the back of your truck, you drive home and you put it up that night. So.
Yeah. I was over at Daryl's house a couple of years ago and it sounded like an aviary there, a bird house. Like every 5 minutes, he's got one of them grandfather clocks chiming. But winning that race, winning the championship, taking Joe Gibbs, the coach, to New York as the champion, that's pretty good, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, with you know, taking his winning the championship for JGR, obviously Coy and Dave and JD. All of us, you know, I mean, it was, when I went to drive for Coach Gibbs, I think I was employee number 18 and, went to the first Christmas party and there weren't but about 30 people there. Right. And I was actually invited to their Christmas party like 3 years ago and there's a 900 people there, it seemed like. So, yeah, that was a huge, obviously a huge deal. I don't think we were quite ready for that. Nobody was, because that was our first time for all of us. Right. But here's another Earnhardt story. Was he let me lease his airplane from him to take the crew, take my family and friends up there. We just beat him for the championship, but yet he still let me use the airplane. So yeah, that's another Earnhardt good story. But so yeah, I mean, and for us, you know, to go up there and you know, we were poised to, you know, throughout 2000, we were just always, I mean, so, you know, either first, second, third, fourth, or fifth, it seemed like we were just in top five, week in and week out. And you know, that's what we had to do. And we won four or five races and able to go to New York and celebrate. I mean, again, it was Coach's first time as a cup champion. He's obviously been back several times since. And for me and Jimmy and everybody else, I mean, you know, it was just like, I mean, you know, best thing you could do in racing, right? And we did it one time.
Well, certainly quite the run from showing up in the early 90s and racing Busch cars and then the championship in 2000. Let's fast forward to where you are today. I know you've been racing, you raced some over in Europe. You raced a bunch of sporty car stuff. You enjoy working out, you stay very active. What's a normal day like for you? Just a Monday afternoon or Tuesday?
Well, today we're pouring concrete in the backyard. It's a construction day. And so we're doing a little redo on the backyard.
When you say we are, they are, and you're showing them where or you are?
I'm not pouring the concrete, but I'm making sure I watch it really close. And so I don't mind getting a hammer and a nail and doing things and project-wise. So usually on a typical Monday, I have projects going on all around my house, whether it's taking this down and fixing that, or back there digging a hole and filling it up, or we got 16 acres building the trails or whatever it might be. So that's on a typical Monday. And, so that's, I'm busy with that. And obviously, racing's a little bit, you know, can't go really much short track racing right now. We don't have a whole lot going on with the COVID-19 thing, but, you know, Bill Riley, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he called me. He texted me a while ago. I'm going to go drive one of his cars here in a few weeks in Virginia. So that'll be fun.
Nice.
And then, and then we actually, speaking of today, we just got back from an IndyCar race this past weekend at Road America. So we do, for what my normal lifetime life is today, is my wife and I have a marketing company. So we handle all the hospitality activation for one of the IndyCar teams. And they finished second this weekend.
Nice.
Behind Rosenquist. So we'll do that. And then we'll also go to Indianapolis next week, week after next, and do a Ferrari race. I'm not driving, but we manage the whole race series. So we do that. That's what we do. So then if I'm not on the Fox studio tomorrow, you know, blah, 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 conference call here, Zoom call there. My weekend, my end of the week will be busy with construction now.
Is there, have you made the call to Tony Stewart about his new series and being a part of that next year? Because I texted him and I just sent the emoji going like,
yeah,
pick me, I'll do it. What do you think about Tony's new series?
Well, is that the one, let me think, is that the one with he and George?
It's he and George and Ray Evernham. And it sounds like Ray's going to, you know, design some cars and they're all going to be alike and there's going to be crew chiefs and then drivers will show up and drive them. And I'm curious, you know, what the cars will be like because the trucks, you know, they race at Eldora and then they race on the asphalt. So I bet you with Tony's involvement, that you know there'll be a place on the schedule for Eldora, I would guess. But then also I read in some statement about Nashville Fairgrounds, but to me that's very intriguing. And I don't know what the criteria is for driving, but I'm in if you are.
Well, I've already sent my emoji.
You did? Good.
Yeah, I have. I've actually, Ray has told me about this for 2 years, so it's kind of been in the works. And they finally got some traction with it. So, but yeah, I don't know of a car that can get race between to go from Eldora to Nashville to wherever road course or something like that. So it sounds like a very diverse field of tracks. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, that's going to be exciting. So hopefully my emoji worked.
Me too. You're very active in iRacing. Producer Ford here on my Michael Waltrip podcast, he likes to iRace. You still race, like you said, you're going to go race in Virginia. Do you feel like iRacing keeps you current, keeps your skills honed so that when you get a chance to go race, and if it is in Tony's series next year, do you feel like you're still good?
I think so. I do think so. You know, last year I ran a modified at Bowman Gray, and
what was that like?
That was the best experience I think I've had in many, many years. I mean,
I really want to do stuff like that, but I'm chicken. I would be afraid. I'd be afraid I couldn't keep up.
The only thing we're missing is Bruce Patron. We need to bring back the Bruce Patron.
Oh, man. Right?
We'll go do some things. But that's again, you go anybody's backyard and they're going to haul the mail and you got to learn how to beat them, right? And so it's hard to do. But no, that was a cool experience. When you have 15,000 fans, I mean, within shouting distance to you all the way around the racetrack, it's just totally amazing. I went up there and I'll be honest with you, Michael, I went up there and I paid $5 to get in. I practiced the guy's car for about 10 laps. I came home, I took a shower and I paid $25 to go back and watch the race. I saw three fights and I said, man, I'm hooked. I got to do this. So the night that I raced, I went up there and practiced. I came home. We watched the truck race on TV, took a little nap, took a shower, went back, ran a race, got done with the race, came home and slept in my own bed. I went, I think that I can do this a lot. So those cars are so much fun. And I want to, hopefully we'll get some more of that racing in. But I do think that, you know, I'll tell you, I raced this year earlier, I raced at Sebring, which I had never been to Sebring before, but I raced a car at Sebring and I tested a car at Road Atlanta.
I got to
so,
do that.
I mean, I'm actually, I feel like I'm kind of current, you know, with driving and stuff like that. Yeah. But I'll tell you a quick story. It was last year I raced a Corvette at Indianapolis on the road course that they just ran the Xfinity cars at, right? The same course. And I ran with Jeff Brabham. Okay. And I went, I am teammates with Jeff Brabham. Holy smokes, Jeff Brabham, that's awesome, you know? So anyway, I got to know him a little bit. And so while I was there, I finished second, and Willie T. Ribbs finished first. Okay. So, and I've known Willie T. Ribbs for a long time, and I got to kind of know him a little bit more, and he is the funniest, coolest guy. So he'll text me every now and then or call me, and we'll talk and talk for an hour. And so, he texted me the other day and said, "Well, congratulations." I said, "Why?" He says, "Well, you're going to win this year at COTA when we go to COTA this fall, because it's your hometown, but home state," but he lives there now. So anyway, Scott Perchetta is, I was driving his car, and it's just been the most fun. And I mean, it's cool to go and do that. And I mean, it's like, I'll drive anything, Michael. I mean, you know, that's kind of my theme. In fact, a really funny story was I was at Road America this weekend. The guy says, "Hey, do you want to drive our Indy car?" And it's an Indy car from like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But just make some laps in it. And unfortunately it broke before I got to drive it. But I'm like, the guy said, "Do you have a helmet?" I said, "No, but I'd get one," you know? So it's just, I mean, it's fun to do stuff like that. And that's not for a race, but we'll race later on this year in some races. But I do feel like between iRacing, your original question, and stuff like that, I mean, I feel like, to me, you know, driving is still something I want to do.
Yeah.
On a lower level.
I have a funny Willie T story. We went to Watkins Glen for the first time, and he was, you know, he was a rookie like me. And he put me in his rental car, and he said, "I'm going to go show you the way around the track." And this was before the inner loop at the back straightaway. And we're in a Cadillac, or it's big. It's a Lincoln. It's a big rental car. And Bobby, we must have been running 125 miles an hour when we went down into that corner at the end of the back straightaway. And yeah. I know the tire was under the rim, like the rim was dragging the road. I couldn't believe it. Yeah. And I grabbed him. I said, "Willie, I'm not going to be able to learn the track. You're scaring the shit out of me. Like, slow down and tell me how to drive it, because this is terrifying." But I want to get you to, when we hang up, I'll get you to give me his number. I want to say hi to him, because I miss him. I haven't seen him in forever.
Yeah. He is. I've had more fun with him, talking to him on the phone, texted with him. Send me a video of his kid doing the competition shooting that he does. I mean, just it's been it's funny when you know people, but you don't really know them. And then when you get to know them, you're like, "Man, I wish I'd have known you forever."
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're having fun. Speaking of fun, what about that darn race yesterday? Cole Custer comes from six and goes four wide at Kentucky and wins that race. First of all, he's such a good kid. I love Cole. I've gotten to know him a bit. Been blessed, you know, when he showed up in the trucks at 16 years old. He won New Hampshire, and I've followed him ever since. And so I feel like I know him probably better than I do, but what a great race yesterday.
Yeah, it was. And I didn't get to watch it because we were flying back from Road America, but I saw the highlights when I landed, and I went, "How did that happen? You know, how in the world did that happen?" So, and you know, the new rules package with the big spoilers and all that stuff. I mean, I think 3 years ago, you wouldn't have been able to do all that, but he still had himself a great opportunity he put himself in a great opportunity. And like you said afterwards, that's the best race car he's had. So, you know, it's one of those things, those guys have figured some stuff out. He's getting better. And I had him picked early in the year to be a winner. You know what I mean? As far as a rookie going. And it was, I know that, Tyler and Christopher are really, really good. But Cole, I mean, it's like, dude, he won that race, and that was good to see. And so on your story about you knowing him, so he raced at my quarter midget track in Salisbury for I don't know how long. With he and his dad raced there for a while. And coming from California, I was at Irwindale last year, and so the guy that owns Irwindale was telling me that Cole would come out there and run every Tuesday or Wednesday night, like 400 laps. His dad would take him out there in a late model. And so I love the fact that he was able to win. He's a fun looking guy, just kind of like calm, and just wants to race, you know? And I mean, there's not much drama with him. He just likes to race. And, but you know, so my little story is he got to race at my quarter midget track in Salisbury when he was, you know, 12 and 13 years old, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's good to see.
And now he's going to be in the All-Star race, and I wanted to ask you about that. How about racing 15 laps for $1 million at Bristol in the All-Star race? Are you like, I know we're TV guys and we get to get on TV and act like we know what we're talking about, and I'm going to be the biggest race fan Wednesday night. I can't wait to watch.
Oh, I'm telling you, it's one of those things to me. I think the year 2020 is going to go down as, for NASCAR, you spent 20 years trying to figure out, you're always scared to do something. And I think that this year they just had to do it, you know, because if your comfort level is like, we'll do it in a couple of years, we'll do this, that. But this year they got to make the changes. They got to acclimate or maneuver in different ways this year. So when they announced that the All-Star race is going to be at Bristol, I'm like, holy crap, that's going to be amazing. I mean, you know, so I was talking to a friend of mine that works for the 47, the 37 car. They've had a bad couple of weeks, but they get to rebound a free weekend or free night. But, you know, if they can make it in and with you know, Ricky and those guys, I mean, but the whole thing, the whole atmosphere is going to be amazing. And you're right. I can't go to the racetrack, but I'll be the fan sitting up on the couch watching on TV. You put that much money on the line at Bristol, I don't know how fast you can go, but they'll probably go faster than they've ever been. You know what I mean? Because when you can hold, you can hold your breath for how many laps, right? I mean, So it's going to be a definite all-star event.
Well, the race we just had at Bristol was incredible with Chase and Joey and Denny. I mean, that was my favorite race of the whole year. So now we're going to up the intensity and see what comes out the other end. I can't wait to watch see who's able to prevail. I've got a quick question. You talked a little bit about your marketing agency. How's that grown, and how do people get in touch with you? How do you get customers? What's it like for you in that world? It's like Bobby Labonte has sped up since he quit racing full time and not slowed down.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, it seemed like the past 2 years, I think we've done more than I've done previous years before that, travel wise and Europe and this and that. And so what we've done is we've done work for NASCAR. We still do work for NASCAR Technical Institute. We've done some work in NASCAR with Smithfield, General Mills before that. I mean, it's been around for 10 years, and Breaking Limits is the name of it. And so Jeff Dennison kind of came to me after at the Petties and was like, let's start our own deal. So we did. And so the General Mills account was ours as far as activation and hospitality goes at the track. So when you have a big tent or have a structure and you cater to the sponsors and to people that come to track, that's what we do. And so we found our niche in that series in doing stuff like that. And what we do is we have a huge tent at the IndyCar races, and it's called Club 5, and it's 5,000 square feet. And we basically do all the entertaining. My brother owns the structure, and we actually do the entertaining and the china and the champagne and the wine and the food. We have chefs, the whole thing. And so when you go in there, it's like everybody's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, right? We got an elevator. We got everything that goes with it. So for SPM McLaren. And so for those guys, that's exciting. And then we also do the Ferrari Challenge Series. So we know some – I knew – A kid when he was little, I knew him, and he's growing up and he works there. And now we connected on LinkedIn and da 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 da. And I know his dad. So we got we were able to do that this year. And that's with Ferrari. And that has been amazing because we're able to put the whole series together as far as all the events together. So it's 5 or 6 races a year. And it's very high end. And again, my wife is the one that does all that. And we have a team of people that, you know, probably got 10 employees doing all this between both series. And, you know, it's a lot of work for both of us, but we enjoy it. And we're looking to do more of that type of stuff. And, you know, NASCAR to me, when I went to the IndyCar race and you go to drag races and you look at how that's done, I mean, NASCAR is a little bit different, but yet I think that, again, they're, you know, the hospitality part about it that you and I both would go do appearances with at. And that's kind of what we do. And so Breaking Limits has been more successful the past 2 years than it was the first 8. So we're just now getting our feet on the ground. So it's a lot of fun to see, and it's a lot of fun to see it grow.
Well, it's a lot of fun to see all that you've got going on. You're an inspiration to me and many, because you certainly haven't let off the gas, and it's cool to see you have the success that you're having. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Yeah,
appreciate you spending some time with me today.
Yep. And if you want to race some dirt race late models, you can buy a Longhorn chassis.
Ah, are they built in over there where you live?
Yeah.
Trinity? Yeah. Are you in Trinity?
Yeah. Well, I'm in High Point, but that shop that we used to race our Busch cars out of, that's where we build the dirt late models.
Nice.
So, yeah, we've got Tim McCready, Jonathan Davenport. I mean, there's a bunch of cars that we've got. I think we built, I don't know, 250 cars maybe, something like that. So.
Hey, well, that was a lot of fun. Man, if he isn't an inspiration, Bobby Labonte has more going on now than ever. Thank you so much, Bobby, for taking time to join me on Waltrip Unfiltered. Remember, share us with your friends. Tell everybody about our podcast. You can go to all of Fox Sports' social media channels and be able to look at our content, share it with your friends, go to your favorite podcast app, and just let people know we're here. It's a lot of fun talking to all these stars and legends, and I'm really thankful that Fox Sports lets me do this podcast week in and week out. Hope you have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon.